Today's sponsor, W Films. W Films is a full-service video production company located in Lewis, Delaware. Need help getting your message out on social media? How about creating a brand film for your company's website? W Films experts can help you create the perfect video and help you get the social media attention you've been looking for. W Films also specializes in marketing materials for real estate. They can provide cinematic video tour, HDR photography, and a fully immersive 360-degree tour to help your property get sold faster and for more money. To find out more, go to wfilmsmedia.com or call 302-569-0725. 302-569-0725. Everyone has a story. Let us tell yours. All right. Good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. Good morning. It is Friday, April the 29th, 2022. Spectacular morning. It's even more spectacular because I ran. The day, the weather, my life, my attitude is always better when I run. Or, better said, when I suffer. And I had a good hour of suffering with the doctor this morning. Me and Jimmy K grinded it out. 4 miles. Beautiful, beautiful morning. Wore shorts. It was just an amazing start to the day. And I'm very grateful. And so today we get to come in. Got a big day of work today. Going out. Actually, funny. We're going out to dinner with my son's girlfriend's parents. Her father is a client of mine, so we actually get along really well. I really like him. And I've introduced myself to her mother, and she's a terrific, or seems to me like a terrific lady. And so we should have a good time. But, you know, there's been a couple incidents. And, you know, if you have teenagers, especially like 16 and dating, you know, I mean, let's be honest. Things are happening. And we've had a couple of those moments. I was asking my son this morning, I'm like, do we have to have a conversation before we go out to dinner? Or is there things we cannot talk about? Or he's like, no, it doesn't matter. And, but you know, there's obviously going to be things I don't want to bring up, but I just want to be prepared, right? Prepared for the conversation. But they're actually very nice folks. Really, really like his girlfriend. And so it should be fine. And we're going to a restaurant called Lefty's, which is, it's a fun place. Good food. Zucchini fries. I'm glad I ran this morning. God, I have a real weakness for the zucchini fries at Lefty's. Oh, my goodness. Delicious. With a little ranch. Uh-oh. So, you know, I thought today, you know, it was funny running with Jimmy this morning, and, you know, I was sharing with him, it's like, because, you know, Jim just celebrated 33 years of sobriety. It's 33 years of continuous sobriety. I, in December, celebrated 13 years of continuous sobriety, but that is not from when I started. You know, I've shared my story. I got sober in 97, and, you know, and really, I thought was doing quite well. I wasn't drinking. I was very involved with the program. I had a sponsor. I was not sponsoring anybody, which was fine. I really wasn't. I was in no real position to be giving any sort of example or, you know, God forbid, advice, right? So I wasn't really sponsoring anybody, but I was definitely in the program. You know, people, I remember, because the conversation had come up, you know, I have not been asked, you know, by anybody to be a sponsor. And I think the guy says, listen, people will know when you're ready, right? You know, we don't see it. I don't see all of my defects. I don't see all of my shortcomings. People see them, right? And, but at the time I wasn't doing any sponsoring, and I was pretty cool with that. We were doing a lot of cool stuff, taking meetings into hospitals. We were taking meetings into rehabs. I even took meetings into jail, which was quite interesting. And, you know, I shared, I think, in the past, you know, when I was in jail in San Diego and Big Bear, at a work release camp in Big Bear Mountain, California. And we were probably 3 hours out. It was probably to get to that camp. It was probably a 3 hour, maybe 2.5 hours. Quite honestly, I can't really remember. I know it was a stretch because I remember driving out there. And I remember actually driving out there to visit a friend. And then it would end up getting arrested and going to the place on my own. But it was a hike. And people used to bring meetings into that facility, these two men. And they would drive. I mean, they were in the car 5 hours. 5 hours on, to get there and get back. And they showed up every week. And I just, you know, I didn't put it all together. I didn't get it, right? I just, you know, I was like, hey, good. I'm glad these guys are here. We don't have to sit in our dorms because that's kind of what we lived in, dorms, cabins for the most part. And, you know, we're just grateful we could go do something. And that's kind of how I felt when I used to take meetings into jail. And it wasn't as inconvenient for me. I mean, we literally drove up the road here, maybe 15, 20 minutes, and there's a jail, and we used to go in it. And but it's very intimidating and very sketchy, and I did not enjoy it. Listen, I don't mind suffering. I don't mind being inconvenienced, but taking meetings into jail, especially, you know, this is not a work release camp. This was basically, I mean, jail, right? This was pretty jail. So I felt like when we were taking the meetings and everybody really just, and I get it. It was, you didn't have to sit in your cell or your dorm, and you could go in and hang out with your friends in a meeting, you know, air quotes in a meeting, but really it was like a social event for everybody else, you know, and you're not going to go in there and sit down a you know, a bunch of rules. I mean, it's, it is what it is. So I just felt, and this is, you know, early sobriety, but I was like, these guys don't give a shit. And it didn't take much to talk myself out of going into jail for the meetings. But the point is that, you know, we did a lot of fun stuff, and really I felt involved in a program. You know, I would say to myself, you know, I have no desire to drink, right? The switch had been turned off, and, you know, my life was changing. You know, I cannot express how much my life was changing, and very, very quickly. I was at such a bottom when I got sober. It didn't take much to make my life better. And I look back at it now and I think, God, you know, your standards at the time were so pathetic. You know, living in that dump of an apartment, you know, we're getting ready to, we're building a new house. We're going to rent our other house. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh, I got to, you know, just the smallest things. I'm like, oh, I want to fix that. I want this place to be, you know, nice for the people that rent it. And I look back into the apartment that I was renting from my uncle, and what a shithole. But that's, you know, and I was fine with it because that's where I was. You know, that's where my life was. So, you know, just immediately, you know, whether it was watching people shake hands, watching people show up, watching people have gratitude and appreciation for people participating in a program that was saving everyone's life. But just the fact that, of, you know, not being drunk, right? So physically removing the alcohol, my life improved. And spiritually, mentally, you know, I've said before, and I've talked about the spiritual awakening, and I was just looking at a big book, and, you know, it's in the appendix, and it talks about, you know, I think that that's a concern that a lot of people have, is this spiritual, because I know that for a guy like myself, who prior to really any sort of spiritual kind of work, it was, what are you going to give me, God? You're not giving me what I want. You're done. I'm done with you, God. That was basically my relationship, or how a self-centered asshole thinks, right? That's how I thought. You're not giving me what I want, God. I don't really have any use for you. And that's how I treated everybody. Unless I was getting something from you, I really didn't have much use for you. And, but, you know, that the change that starts to take place, you know, and I've always believed that I've always have a spirit. You know, when you read that or hear that, you think, oh, my spirit must be sort of sleeping, right? It's unconscious. No, I think our spirit, my at least spirit, was always there. I just put so much other bullshit on top of it that it was unrecognizable. I couldn't see it. I couldn't see the trees through the forest. The forest being a lot of self-centered shit. You know, what I'm not getting, this isn't fair. You know, just a bunch of self shit. But you know, working through it and trying to enjoy the improvements of my life, but still, you know, trying to have some restraint, right? But at the time, I felt like everything was really going well. And you know, and I ended up getting a girlfriend, right? And the girlfriend would expose my first real challenges that just because I got a new coat of paint on the car doesn't mean the fucking engine's any better. And I was on the outside, the dents were popping out, my clothes improved, my living situation improved, but inside I was emotionally and spiritually deficient. And so anything, you know, I remember someone telling me, hey, there's a girl that at the gym that's interested in you. And I was like, oh my God, really? Oh, you know, like the mind just took off. Like, I'm great as long as everything's pretty normal. But throw a fucking couple, you know, new things into my life and I fucking fly off the path really quick. And that's how it was. You know, I was good in the program early on. But then when the girl showed interest, I was like, you know, then I was obsessed with the girl, and then I got into a relationship with the girl, and then because we dated for almost a year, and for the whole year, I felt like I wasn't good enough. Always questioning, always paranoid, jealous. I mean, if you have no value, or if I have no value in myself, I'm going to feel like everything is more than I deserve. And at any minute, it's going to end. And that's kind of how I felt, especially in that new relationship. You know, just not good enough. How come this girl is with me? You know, like a year ago, I was a bum. And now I'm sober and I got better clothes and I'm, you know, living a better life. And now I'm really hanging out with the cream of the crop. But spiritually and mentally, I was not ready. And I just remember this series of events. And you know, I feel like that whole period of my life was, you know, it was sobriety, but it wasn't. It really wasn't. I mean, I remember this. I was, you know, in a dating situation early on in sobriety, not following directions, not following suggestions, and being, you know, started dating this really great girl and who had an amazing job, who wasn't a drunk, who wasn't on drugs, who wasn't an asshole. And, you know, I had not really hung out with someone like that, at least not since like elementary school. So, you know, I didn't feel like I fit in. And so I would worry, always worried, when's she going to break up with me, right? Well, she's got to be talking to somebody else because clearly she has to see that I'm a fucking bum. Always in fear and stress. And then you start to become toxic. I've been in relationships like this. I'm like, you know, I've been with people and they're, you know, they go through the same thing. Where are you doing? What, you know, are you seeing other girl? It's just like, listen, find value in yourself. And that's what I was missing. I had zero value in myself. I didn't know how to have value. I didn't know how to like a Tom that was worthwhile. It hadn't happened for a long time. And when it was happening, I was so young and immature, I didn't know what the fuck was going on anyway. So to like, you know, on the outside it looked okay, but on the inside it was not. And then I remember finally I went out on this, my buddy Rick is who I talk about, was one of the first people I got sober with, him and I. He called me, he's like, hey, a friend of mine's having a dinner party, you want to go? I'm in the dumps because basically the relationship that I was having was ending. And it wasn't her fault. It was my fault. I became a person that was undateable, you know, insecure. And this is just expected. I don't think this is how we are. I just think this is how I was because I hadn't done anything to grow spiritually or mentally. So I was just in a bad place. I was undateable. Went out with my buddy Rick and then ran into the girl I was dating, and she was on another date. And I just remember being devastated, right? But I'm sober, right? I'm not drinking. So in my mind, I'm doing well, but I'm not handling situations early on very well. And I remember running into her, just being absolutely gutted that she's on a date. And, you know, this was it. This was, you know, what it was all about. This was, you know, I was always wanting to be with better people. I mean, when it was in my addiction, I hung out with people just like me. I didn't want to. I wanted to improve my choices in life. And so this was it. And it was coming to an end. And I remember, you know, I had gone out to a dinner with Rick, and we hung out with some female friends, and I ended up talking to this girl, and then we would go to a club to go dance. That's where I ran into the current, which would soon be the ex, on a date. And then I just remember I grabbed on to this girl I had met that night and just didn't let go. You know, I took her hostage. And I don't mean physically, but, you know, I showed interest in her when I shouldn't have. I pursued her more than I would have on a regular day, you know. But since the breakup had happened, I was so heartbroken, and so I didn't know how to process feelings and deal with that shit. I just grabbed onto her, and I just never let go. And it seemed like, I mean, you know, it's a rebound, right? And I think what happens in a rebound is that you satisfy this loneliness, this I'm no good kind of feeling by grabbing onto someone. And then once those feelings start to subside and you start to feel better, then you lose interest in the person. You take them hostage and you use them until you feel better, and then you discard them. The problem is that I held on to this girl for so long. We ended up getting married. We ended up having a child. And eventually that addiction, that disease would start to show up. And it was like, you know, 4 years into my first attempt at being sober, and I started to become possessed. And we were laughing that, you know, the movie, what's it called? Where the girl is possessed by the devil and her head turns around. I go, that's what it's like being an alcoholic. You know, that's how, you know, at some point, I was okay, and then, but I'm basically living on bad behavior, you know, taking hostages, using people to make myself feel better, all under the umbrella of being sober, and it's a mess. No wonder I would end up drinking. And I remember this voice, and, you know, my buddy James and I were laughing, because I say it's the fucking devil, man. It was like the devil came up and was like, hey, how you doing? And I'm like, I think I'm doing good, right? And, you know, and then all of a sudden he starts to kind of undermine, you know. You like the way, I remember going to these meetings, and I didn't, for some reason, I had an issue with the way they collected the money. And that voice would be like, I can't believe they do it this way. That's not a basket. I think they may have used a coffee can. You're like, you should really, can't we get a basket in this fucking place? And I just started to undermine it. And it was all, it unwound very quickly. And eventually there would be this voice that said, listen, I think you've done so well, you probably could drink again. And at this point, I'm like, okay, I guess maybe. And I picked up that drink and just could not stop again. I was possessed. I needed an exorcism to get that shit out of me. And all of a sudden, I'm trying to talk my wife into, you know, and I did. I'm like, listen, I think I can, it's been for almost 5 years. I think I'm good. I'm going to try drinking again. Just a few, right? Just a couple. And and she agreed, right? And that would be the beginning of a nightmare of drinking and, you know, eventually losing my wife and her losing, taking my son. And but I feel like that's really what I needed. I don't suggest anybody does that. Listen, if you can, like my buddy Jim, you know, he put down the drink and 33 years later, he hasn't had a drink. I mean, that's awesome. I know people are proud to share that, right? And that's fine. My story isn't like that. And I don't believe, for me, I could have just put down the drink and then not picked up another drink. I think I had to drink again. And I had to, because it would expose a lot of shit. I didn't really, the world, how I look at myself prior to drinking compared to the way that I look at myself after drinking are, and how fucked up and soul sick and self-centered and deficient I was. I needed to take the alternative route and bump along a little longer. And then finally my eyes would open and it's been a great journey. I can't, you know, I wish I could still say, hey, I've only, you know, I put down the drink and never drank again, but that's, it just didn't work for me. And I personally am very grateful for that.
Weekend wreckers take the streets with abandon in their eyes, but in our bedroom with bloodshot and beat, and never so alive. But I know what's on your mind. God knows I put in there, but if I took it back, well, you'd be nowhere. You'd be nowhere again. Now look at you all torn up. I left you waiting to bleed. Guess the truth works two ways. Maybe the truth's not what we need. And I know what's on your mind. God knows I put in there, but if I took it back,
song right there. Yeah, so I guess the point we were laughing is this morning is that, you know, the journey, whatever your journey is, it doesn't matter. You know, it's what you want. It's, you know, I was reading this morning in one of the books I was looking at that, you know, requires honesty. I've talked about it before. What is it we want? What do you want? What do I want? Right? I mean, the first thing I really want is I don't want to drink. Right, but there's other things that we can have. You know, those promises are pretty awesome. And, you know, it talks about opportunities that we can have if we work a program. And, you know, it's fantastic. And so this morning, you know, yes, one of the things that I've, I was trying to find it. If someone knew or someone could tell me, the Mr. Jones story. I know it's in, I've read it. I didn't make that shit up. It's either in the 12 and 12 or the big book, but it talks about this, you know, this Mr. Jones. And, you know, yesterday, you know, there's a lot of interesting topics going on around the world. Fucking so many. But the latest one, you know, is this Elon Musk buying Twitter and all the drama and stuff that comes around it. And I was talking to a client yesterday I was working, and the guy was like, because he was talking about, oh, yeah, I'm getting solar panels on my house. And I was like, oh, interesting, right? I go, did you look at Tesla solar panels? And he's like, I wouldn't buy anything from that douchebag. And I'm like, what? Yeah, he's a fucking douchebag. And I'm like, why? What's going on? I mean, I didn't say it. I said, oh, okay. All right. And he's like, why would you ever buy solar panels from Elon Musk? I go, Well, I personally want one of those. I wouldn't want one of those big square solar panels on the side of my fucking house that look like shit. And Elon Musk created a solar panel that actually looks like a roof shingle. It looks very cool. And, you know, so you don't realize the solar panels. It just looks like shingles, but some of them are solar panels. And then, you know, and he has this whole system where it's, you know, saves the energy in a battery or two batteries. And you basically become off the grid. You know, you charge up during the day and then you run your house off these batteries at night. And he's like, I wouldn't buy anything from that douchebag. And then I was talking to my buddy James, and he was a little disgruntled about Elon. And I'm like, you know, why? It's like Mr. Jones. It's the same thing. This happens. It seems like it's happening a lot. There's so much stuff going on, and people are so opinionated, and they have so much hate, whether it's like they hate the president, they hate Trump, they hate Elon Musk, they hate Jeff Bezos. They hate all the people of power. And some, I think, deserve it, maybe, right? Pelosi, people hate Pelosi. I sort of get that, you know. I don't believe the hate for Pelosi is about jealousy. I think the hate for Pelosi is sort of about jealousy. Like, you know, the fact that she can trade on stock tips and make money is not fair, right? It should be illegal. And it should be, you know, she should go to jail. Or I should be able to do it. You know, is that what it is? Do I hate Pelosi, or do I just wish that I could make some money doing some stock? I think it's an honest question. And, you know, like this guy yesterday, hating Elon Musk. I'm like, well, what is it that you hate? Because I don't, I don't know many people. I mean, I don't even know him, but I haven't heard of many people that have created five different billion-dollar companies. And they're all pretty good companies, right? So it's the same sort of thing as Mr. Jones. It's like, you know, that's fine if you're going to hate Elon, but, you know, be honest about it. Do you hate him because he has all this money, or did he personally do something wrong? Because personally, I think he's awesome. I think, you know, I love what he's doing. Is it great? I have no idea. You know, I'm not smart enough to know. I mean, he made a company, SpaceX. Spaceships are flying in space. I mean, if that's was the goal, is to get into space with spaceships, he succeeded. He built electric cars. I mean, a lot of people bought them, right? A lot of people own Teslas. Very popular, very clicky, right? I have even considered wanting to buy a Tesla, and I had to take a hard look at it and figure out what was really behind that. And I think it's pride and ego, right? Do I need it? No. I actually need the car that I have, my Jeep, my Grand Cherokee, because it has space for, like, groceries and kids' stuff, and it can be beat up a little bit. But an electric car, and, of course, the one I want, I can't afford. I'd want the S, and that's, like, fucking $150,000. I don't have that kind of money. So what I would end up doing is buying the cheaper one so that I could still be part of the club, but, you know, sacrificing all the great things that I love about my Jeep to get this car. And I love the Tesla, but it doesn't work for me. I don't have, if it was just my wife and I and we didn't, you know, do much, yeah, sure, I'd have one. But we have bikes and kids, and it's a mess. So, but same old thing, you know, just trying to figure out what, so this, it was funny, this guy's like, I wouldn't buy anything from that scumbag or douchebag or whatever he is. But what he ended up buying was a Ford Fiesta EV car, which is a total. I'm like, yeah. The only problem is you got to drive around in a Ford Fiesta. I mean, that's a hideous car. All because he thinks that Elon Musk is a douchebag. And it's pretty crazy. Should I read the Daily Reflections? Let's see. Can we find it? Without making a big issue here. Can't hear them. First thing. Okay, maybe this isn't going to be too bad. Daily Reflections. Today is April the 29th. All right, Daily Reflections, April 29th. Group autonomy. Some may think that we have carried the principle of group autonomy to extremes. For example, in its original long-form, Tradition 4 declares, any two or three gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that as a group, they have no other affiliation. But this ultra-liberty is not so risky as it looks. AA Comes of Age, page 104. As an active alcoholic, I abused every liberty that life afforded. How could AA expect me to respect the ultra-liberty bestowed by Tradition 4? Learning respect has become a lifetime job. Learning respect has become a lifetime job, I agree. AA has made me fully accept the necessity of discipline, and that if I do not assert it from within, then I pay for it. This applies to groups too. Tradition 4 points me in a spiritual direction, in spite of my alcoholic inclinations. This is a misquote. Bill is referring to the third tradition. I guess there's an asterisk here. Where did I see it? Oh, well, I don't know, but interesting. Yeah, anyway, go read that. Anyway, I hope everyone's having a great day. I appreciate you letting me share. I know that, it's just up to me on a daily basis how much serenity I want in my life. You know, I think that first 4 years of me trying to get sober was about self. It was about me. It was about kind of just running self out of energy. And self did very well while we were drinking and partying. Self didn't do as well when we were sober. Eventually got us back into the bottle, but it would take coming back and to start to recognize what a mess self is, and that I'm here for more than just, sobriety. I'm here for spirituality. I'm here for serenity, and that's just about being honest on every situation. All right, have a great day. Bye. Bleed.
I guess the truth works too. Maybe the truth's not what we need, and I know what's on your mind. God knows I put in there, but if I took it back.